This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 7, Episode 3, Unrealistic Practice. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about how sometimes it's worth doing some unrealistic practice, as well as some realistic practice. Find out what that's all about on the show later on. And we have a couple of questions. One about closing the face when you're batting, and another one about batting down the order when you're a natural opener. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to better cricket. It doesn't matter who you are or where you are. We are here to help you out for about half an hour or so. And who are we? Well, first of all, my name is David Hinchliffe. I look after things here. And helping me to help you are two very fine cricket coaches. The first is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Mealfield School, although he's not there at the moment. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garras. Where are you?
I'm in Dublin Airport at the moment. I've just finished 2 days of tutoring on level three for ICC Europe, effectively, for a load of guys from Scotland and Ireland. And a very special Monty Panesar is on the course as well, and absolutely loving it. It was fantastic to catch up with Monty, to go back to my Irish roots, I suppose, and meet up with a few people and just spend some time talking about fielding yesterday. And then about batting today, which was a magnificent experience. I really enjoyed it. And I hope that the guys learned a couple of things and go back and use it in their environments.
And the more people who can learn that Panesar celebration, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, too right. We didn't see too much about it. He's recovering from a shoulder injury at the moment and rehabbing ahead of the season. Hopefully, fingers crossed, there's a county that's very interested in signing him up, and it would be great to have Monty back on the scene. I think he's in a good place at the moment, and it was an absolute joy to be around him.
Secondly, on the line, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School, and a man who has negotiated both mini cheddars and traffic jams to be here on time. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavis.
Hello there. I'm still negotiating the mini cheddars, but I've got through the traffic jam.
Oh, fantastic. Well, there you go. The full gamut. The full gamut in one day.
Absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about training. It's high, certainly, on my mind at the moment, what with winter nets or pre-season nets, I suppose, we're going into now, kicking off very shortly. And tying that into a drill that Garra's put up on the website recently, his lifeline drill, where... well, Garras, I might get you to explain it, but we'll come back to it in a minute. But the theme around it was that although it's not necessarily the most realistic of training, it's doing lots of good things. So my thought is that we often push towards saying, trying to make training more realistic, which is a brilliant aim to do. But there are some times when you can make training less realistic and still get a benefit from it. So, Garras, maybe you can tell us a bit more about that drill specifically for those people who haven't seen it on the Pitch Vision website, and then we can talk a little bit more about how unrealistic training can sometimes be as useful as realistic training.
Yeah, I mean, this really is a concept that's come from Graham Thorpe about coaching back from the international game. And the idea behind it is that generally, as we go through the age groups, when we're in the under-11s through to the under-15s, the only balls that we really face on a regular basis are ones that are front foot based, because people don't have the pace or the wickets aren't hard enough or whatever. So we have a diet of front foot stuff. And then all of a sudden we get to a certain age, or we progress quickly and play men's cricket, and the ball tends to bounce more because the men are obviously stronger. The kids get stronger towards 16, 17 and onwards. The ball gets faster, the pitches get harder, and all of a sudden we're being asked to develop a completely new side of our game very quickly, but often under massive amounts of pressure. So Graham Thorpe talks about coaching back from the international game and actually coaching back foot play first, because although it's going to be later in match play down the line for people, by the time they get there, they can have the skills already ingrained within the body to deal with it. And one of the things that people struggle with is pace. That's always, as we go up through the player development models, wherever we are, the pace increases. So this drill effectively starts off as a bowling machine drill where the ball's coming at high pace. So as you'd have seen, anybody that looked at the article and knows that now going to have a look at it. I started it on 87 miles an hour, which is rapid out of a bowling machine. But I fired it way outside off stump, and I fired it into an area where potentially people could play cut shots. The cut shot is a shot that is notoriously difficult to coach, notoriously difficult to train, and generally it's only the higher levels of game that it gets played on a regular basis. And it's actually the drill that Joe Root developed post being dropped after the Ashes, where he got dropped in the last Test match. And the cut shot is now a signature shot of his, whereas he didn't have it in his armoury and he felt that he needed to develop it. So Graham Thorpe fired loads of balls outside off stump initially just to get Joe used to and get kids used to the ball going past them at really fast rates, faster rates than they've experienced. They're quite safe because the ball is way outside off stump. And the first ball is going to feel really uncomfortable. I bet you, even if you just stand there and watch these balls go past you, by the time you face a 100th one, you'll be much more comfortable with these higher levels of pace. And then whenever you want in that drill, you can start to hit the cut shot. And we see that. It was the first time that we did it last week. Those kids had no warm-ups. Those were the first few balls that they faced in there. And by the end of the session, they're asking me to turn the pace up and get it up over 90 miles an hour. We did exactly the same today with a guy called Kenny Carroll, who I used to work with when I was working in Ireland. And he got it up to 91 miles an hour. And he was just absolutely smashing it. And he was finding a way of getting that shot done. So the lifeline is the cut shot. But actually what we're training there is the ability to coach back from the international game, get people doing stuff which is going to stand them in good stead later on. And it's a fantastic way to train.
So even though these players may never face bowling at that pace, it's kind of overloading the system, if you like, by saying... It potentially you might do at some point. If you make it into international cricket, you're going to be facing guys who can bowl even faster than that. But right now, you're just getting used to it, and it's overloading. And then when you go back to face the gentler bowling of in a real match, it's going to feel a lot easier for people.
It is, and it's confidence boosting, because even if somebody just stands there and watches these balls go by and gets a little bit more comfortable with that pace going by them, because it's quite an unnerving thing when you first face somebody who's absolutely rapid. You know, trust me, I never used to do training like this, and then all of a sudden I had to face Shoaib Akhtar. Well, good luck, Garraway. You know, it's not an easy thing to do. But the confidence you get just by, you know, and the chat around school, I faced it at 87 miles an hour. You know, I hit three cuts at 87 miles an hour. Now, they might not have gone off the middle of a bat or gone where they intended to, but just having the confidence to be able to react and hit those balls, and then over time increase their competency to be able to play those with great ease. It's a huge confidence booster, and the chat that's gone around the school in the last week has just been amazing.
Levers, do you find that there are times when you can use a less realistic kind of training to teach something specific like that?
Yeah, I guess we do something similar, which is an overload-based drill, but is more spin-related. One of the drills that we do for playing against spin and for advancing down the crease is where we'll get the machine really spinning the ball, so we'll tilt it on an angle and get it really fired up, so we'll get it dipping in and turning away. So the ball's probably going to turn probably 30 degrees, and if we flip the mat over the other way, we can actually get it turning probably 45 degrees, if not more. I mean, it's absolute chaos. but in doing that, it doesn't really matter how much the ball's turning, particularly if you get to the pitch of the ball. So obviously, you can do a nice, simple drill where people are trying to move their feet and get to the pitch of the ball. It's all very nice. But ultimately, if they don't get to the pitch of the ball and they still hit it, then you've not really tested or assessed their ability to perform that skill. Whereas if you make sure that by putting a hell of a lot of spin on it, and much more than they're probably like to face, and much more bounce than they like to face in a match situation, but if you put that on every ball, it means that they have to get to the pitch of the ball and they've really got to commit to doing what the objective is. And if they don't, then they look a fool and they miss the ball and the bails are off. So, that's probably similar in that we're getting a lot more pace on the ball, a lot more turn on the ball, a lot more dip and bounce than they're ever going to face, or they're likely to face anyway. But really, all it's doing is heightening their skills and making them really commit to what we're asking them to do, which is get as far down the pitch and as close to that ball as they possibly can.
With a drill like that as well, it's really important to make sure that the player is responding in the right way, because there's going to be a lot of failure in that kind of drill, isn't there? It's going to make you look a bit of a monkey quite a lot of the time. And if you can say, look, don't worry if it goes wrong. This is why we're here to practice this, you know, because if you can nail this even twice in the session, then you're never going to face this in a match situation. So it'll feel so much easier when you get out there. But that's managing the kind of the mental side of it as well, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Whether it's a high skill drill like that, where your expectation might be for someone to just hit 2 out of 10, which would be great, or it's a drill that's very, very easy and they can do quite well, but actually you're looking for 99 out of 100, if not more. Just gauging that level of success that we're after and the expectation that is placed on that individual is pretty important. So they know what is expected of them and they know what really indicates success or failure.
Okay, let's wrap up this section with the yes-no round. That is 3 questions that can only be answered yes or no to, no matter how much more the team wants to say. I've got the questions, so let's fire away. First question. All good teams have good communication.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question. Process before results.
Yes.
Yes.
Third question. A captain's shelf life is always short.
No.
Oh, such harmony. Now we are moving into the portion of the show where we answer questions that have been sent in by the listeners or readers to the Pitch Vision Academy website. How it works is you send in your question to us, we do our best to answer that question, and whether we answer it to your satisfaction or not, we pick a winner. The best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can send your questions into us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com, and there are other ways to get in touch. We'll tell you about towards the end of the show. First person who's contacted this week is George. And George says, my son is a left-handed batsman. And as with all left-handers, they struggle with the bat face closing too quickly, with the result that a lot of balls go into the leg side. Are there any quick remedies or exercises that you can direct me to that I can help him to overcome this issue?
Well, if I can have a bit of a stab, I'm not sure I agree with the first part of that, George. I'm not going to be overly argumentative, but I don't think all left-handers struggle with the bat face closing too quickly. I'll give you a few examples. I mean, Syed Anwar, if anybody watched him, he was an unbelievable player, especially in one-day cricket, whose bat face would definitely not close too quickly. If anything, it was probably a little bit overly open. But in one-day cricket, it enabled him to use the angle of the right arm over ball in particular. And he used to beat backward point either side and score at an incredibly fast rate. One of the best players in sort of the old style one-day cricket that there was in the world. So I'm not, and there's lots of examples of people that don't necessarily close a back face. So I don't think it is something that we can be as generic as saying that all left-handers struggle with that. But your son is, and so what can we do? Well, I think one of the first things that we can do is have a look at the alignment of his stance and seeing if that's working for him. Because often the bat closes as a result of the alignment either of the stance or the alignment of the backswing. And a couple of weeks ago, I think I mentioned about Marcus Driscoffic actually trying to keep his hands too tight to him at some times. And as a left-hander, he'd often then pull his bat behind him, and in order for him to access the ball, he has to come around his bat, his body, or around his pads to get to the ball, which obviously will have a natural closing effect on the bat. When Marcus was at his best, he had that bat sort of coming straight back down through the ball, almost straight back down to that right arm over bowler, which is most of the balls that we face as a top order left-handed batter. So I'd have a look at that. And again, you know, if you want to take some imagery from the front of your son playing that, then please send it in and we can have a look at it. So normally there's an alignment thing going on which might cause the bat to have to come around, or as with Marcus on occasions, and it was something that we always had to keep an eye on, was keeping making sure that bat was always visible from right arm over, as opposed to going slightly behind the body. And it's a common error that can happen that leads to a bat face closing. The other thing to have a look at is where your contact point is. And we talk about contact points a lot. Most players in the world need to have a late contact point. sometimes as a left-hander or even a right-hander, our early contact point can cause us to close the face of a bat. So have a look at those two things. But, feel free to send some imagery in for myself and Sam and David to have a look at.
And when you say an early contact point, Gareth, do you mean hitting the ball further out in front of you?
Yeah. So that can happen. And so I'll give you an example. If I hit the ball out in front of myself, I actually go the other way and I end up slicing it a little bit more because of the way that my body is organised rather than closing the face on it. But some players have the opposite effect. So, you know, have a look at your contact point and you'll know by standing at the side, which is the best place to have a look at it, what the ideal contact point is for any given player. Again, use your iPhone or your Samsung or whatever you've got in your pocket to make phone calls to take that imagery, and then you can have a bit of a check and challenge to yourself what you're seeing. Give that feedback visually to the player that you're working with, in this case your son, and that could be the cause, but it's often alignment, it's often what the bat swing does and the alignment of the bat swing and downswing back to the ball. And if it's not either of those, then it could be contact. But again, take some pictures, send them in.
David, have you seen this problem with left or right-handers where they're playing the ball with a closed face? A hooded face is another phrase that I've heard. And if you have, what sort of corrective work have you done?
Yeah, you do see it now and then. You don't see it that, I wouldn't say massively more with left-handers and right-handers or anything on those lines, but you do see it from time to time. Definitely that timing point is one that I'd have considered, and the alignment of the body, so the natural swing of the bat and making sure the natural swing of the bat is going to come through in the line we'd like it to. So as Gareth suggested there, thinking about path of bat on the way through and previously on the way back is going to be really vital to have a look at. Other things we can do is obviously we can think about how we're using our hands and possibly trying to switch on muscles or switch on that top hand a little bit more if we wanted to and we felt that was a benefit. I know there are lots of guys who around the world playing at top level cricket who will try and overload that top hand in their preparation before a game to try and switch that on and get that working a little bit more, which might decrease the closing of the bat slightly. Obviously, everyone's slightly different, and as Gareth has suggested there, he goes the other way and he goes a little bit inside out. So one rule for one person isn't going to be one rule for everyone. But I think either overloading that top hand or thinking a little bit about your alignment or thinking about the timing of your contact, out of those three, you're probably going to have a pretty good idea initially of what is the one for you, because you probably know yourself quite well, or you'll know your son quite well in this instance. And just play around with those or a combination of them, and you'll probably find that you can make some quite quick progression as soon as you've identified what it is. But that feedback of video is so important and so useful, because if you then know what you're looking for and you know there are three possible options there for a start, just having a quick look at that, you'll probably pick out one or two that could be really useful for you, and you can crack on and start making a little bit of progress.
David, would it be worth George downloading the app? Because of the video capability that it's got, you know, and also the different frame rates that you could get that type of visual clarity from.
Absolutely, if he's got an Android phone or an iPhone, he can download the Pitch Vision app from the relative app store and do exactly that. So that's a great idea, Gareth. You know, you can slow it down, you can draw lines on it, you can go frame by frame. So, you know, it's a free app. So that's exactly the perfect use for it, really. You know, get it down to, you know, get it up to 240 frames a second, and then go through it frame by frame and find out exactly what's going on. Get it from the front and from the side, I'm guessing, as well, Gareth, if you're talking about contact point. Yeah,
absolutely. And you know, 240 frames per second, so we use quite expensive cameras to get that type of frame rate out of, and the clarity and the amount of information that provides us, I'm sure Sam does the same for bowlers and batters, is absolutely awesome. And George, you can get that type of clarity on whatever phone you're using.
Yeah, for nothing. Yeah. One thing that I've found has worked well for me in the past is asking a player to think about where they're looking to drive the ball is often a kick, because often they'll default to what feels comfortable. But if you say, well, let's change your V, let's move your V to a slightly different area, and then when they've got a specific target zone they're trying to hit into, then it helps them to readjust their body and get themselves aligned better on what we've been talking about. With a right-hander, certainly if I get the bowling machine and stick it left arm over and swing the ball in, then ask the batsman to aim the drive sort of mid-on kind of area, then that often helps them sort of get their alignment of their bat and the swing of their bat into a nicer position to be able to do that when they go back into a live net or a game situation.
I think that's a good suggestion.
Next question is from Liam. And Liam says, I'm an opening batsman who likes to play a conservative game. I prefer to play myself in and wait for the bad ball. Last season I played in a new team and was asked to bat 6 or 7. I was okay with this, but it's not my natural game. I tried to speed up my scoring by rotating the strike, but I got run out a few times. I also tried to learn some power hitting, but never had the confidence to play it in matches. I'd like to do well enough in the middle order to be trusted to open. So what can I do to learn how to play at this position against my natural game?
Okay, well, first thing I'd say is if you're harbouring ambitions to open the batting again, even though that might not be something that's going to happen in the immediate future, I'd make it pretty clear that that's what your objective is. So speak to your captain, speak to your coach, speak to those decision makers and let them know that, yes, you're keen to develop your skills in this different scenario and this different match situation, but actually you would like at some stage to potentially get back up the top and have a go at that. So with a view to that, see if there are any opportunities for you to move up from 6 or 7. And possibly play that role. And as you've said there, you're looking to, I think, to develop a bit more confidence in that ability, and or maybe some confidence in your team's ability in you to play that kind of role. And maybe if there are 2 or 3 early wickets, say, look, this is made for me. I can get up there instead of being 6 or 7. Get me in at 4 or 5 when the ball's swinging around. We've lost a couple of early wickets and I'll steady the ship. And I'll play that role and I'll show you that I can give that strength as an opening batter that maybe we don't have already, or maybe that you don't want to expose that middle order to the new ball. I'm ready to go and get it. So I'd have that conversation early on. After that, I'd be thinking about how you can play. If you are going to play that role, what are the different scenarios you're going to be in? What are the key skills you're going to need to fill those scenarios and perform them successfully? And which ones are most likely to be suited to you. So obviously batting at 6 or 7, there are multiple situations you can find yourself in, whether it is walking out with 6 balls to go and having the freedom to go and hit 6 sixes without any consequences, or potentially walking out with 6 balls to go needing 6 sixes to win. And then again, you can be walking
That's
out there.
That's a tough one.
It's not easy, but it's not easy. I'm sure someone's done it before, though. Similarly, you could be walking out there and you could be 31 for 5 on the board after 10 overs, and you've got 40 overs to go, or however many, depending on the format you're playing, and there's a long road ahead. So you've got to really think about the role and what skills are going to be most beneficial to you. From what it says there, you've tried a bit of power hitting. Now, power hitting isn't really something you can, in my opinion, that you can kind of try a little bit of. Because a big part of it is technical, but also a big part is physical development and developing bat speed and developing body movement and hip rotation and those kind of things. So it's not the sort of thing you can dip in and dip out of. You probably need to try and commit to it for a period of time. So don't lose confidence in your ability to do that. And don't think that because you've tried it and it doesn't work, it's never going to work for you. It's probably something you've got to commit to over a little bit longer, maybe 6-8 months, maybe even a year of really trying to develop that. And once you've developed it as a skill, again, it's something you've got to learn how you're going to apply it, because just because you've developed a new ability to hit a ball doesn't mean you can just go and start whacking balls for 6 all over the place. There's a lot more to it than that. So yes, think about the skills, think about how you're going to develop them, but also think about how you're going to apply them and judge the successes and failures, not necessarily on whether you're getting out or whether you're scoring lots of runs, but on the decisions you make, as well as the skill development and the progression you're making on the physical side of things.
Just on that point about committing to developing a skill of power hitting, two things really. One, if he's thinking, actually, I'm just sitting at number 6 because I'm just waiting for my chance to open the batting, so I'm not really going to want to do much power hitting anyway. And second of all, how much time do you need to commit to it to be able to get to where you want to be? I mean, I know that's a tough question to answer because how long is a piece of string, but you know, what would you count as someone committing to it, I suppose?
Yeah, going back to your first question, you were talking about, oh, well, do I commit to it if I want to go up the top of the order? Well, let's have a look at the guys who've been the most successful at the top of the order, and a lot of those guys do give the ball a decent hit. Not all of them, granted, but there's no reason that a power game isn't going to suit you. And with the increased run rate that we're seeing in international cricket, and invariably those kind of things start to filter down into club cricket and amateur cricket, that I think there's going to be more and more demand and more expectation for people to get on with it sooner rather than later. So that power hitting is going to stand you in good stead, regardless of whether you're doing it from number one or doing it from number seven.
There's no reason why you couldn't smash the third ball of the innings for six, is there?
No.
There's no rules against it, so...
Absolutely not. If you think the bowler's maybe not done a full warm-up and he's not ready to go, then target number one. Get yourself ready. Expect a little looser and get it straight back over his head. But again, you've got to prepare properly to do that, and you've got to make sure you're confident in yourself and confident in your ability to do that. But in terms of when are you going to see progression... I would imagine that on the physical side, you'd probably see progression, or depending on what you're doing in your sessions. But if you're thinking about developing the technique, so practicing opening up that front foot, driving those hips through and extending those arms and following through a ball, and you're practicing that and possibly doing a little bit of power hitting practice, something that I actually did at PGS earlier on this evening with the boys, where we've got a weighted bat and a normal bat and then a lightweight bat, so they develop a bit of hand speed. And you're doing those kind of drills, things like that, to try and get your body working through a ball rather than just your hands hitting through a ball. I would imagine that in probably 8 to 12 weeks, you'd see a pretty big progression. You'd probably see a reasonable progression in less than that. And that would be doing it twice a week. I would imagine you'd see significant progression twice a week, probably in 4 weeks. Because you usually get an initial spike when you're switching on something new. However, these are sort of things that, as with anything, just because you've made that improvement doesn't mean it's then you've got it and it'll stick around forever. So it is another part of your training that you've probably got to keep up and something you've got to maintain over a period of time if it's going to continue to be part of your game. So you can't just pick it up and put it down when you like to. It's something that, unfortunately, you might have to just dedicate 10, 12 minutes to each session somewhere in the corner of the room while everyone else is wondering what the weird fella's doing swinging his bat.
Gareth, what have you got to add to Liam's situation?
Yeah, so my point really, Liam, is that I think this is a great opportunity for you because you're going to learn some skills at six or seven that you'll be able to transfer back into the top order of the game when you get up there. And I've got no doubt with your intention about the top order, that will happen at some times, but you'll go back as a more rounded, more versatile, and more resourceful player. So if we look at the singles and rotations of a singles, yeah, you've been run out a couple of times, but what have you learned? So what have you learned about your method of getting a single? What have you learned about pace off of the bat? What have you learned about how you go about running between the wickets? These are the key things that you can take out of these experiences and then take into whatever number you bat, because we do have to pick up singles. We do have to have an awareness of keeping that scoreboard ticking over. We do have to keep swapping the strike to give different challenges and different problems to that bowling unit that are coming against you and whoever you're batting with at the other end, because everybody is different. So I think it's a great opportunity for you to learn that. So my question is, what have you learned as a result of trying to run between the wickets? Because if you understand your learning, then you can do something that makes it more of a permanent and positive change. And secondly, exactly the same principle in the power hitting. At the moment, you're not confident enough to use it in matches, even though you've had a go at it. But my question to you would be, what are you saying to yourself around encouragement? How are you supporting yourself, both in your practice, but more importantly, when you go out into matches? Because you've probably got an expectation that if you do it in a match and you get out, you're going to give yourself a hard time. The bottom line is, if you're going to go power hitting, the chances of you getting that wrong every now and again are going to be quite high. So you're going to have to accept that occasionally you're going to make an error. And I think the best coaches in the world, and we have to be good coaches of ourselves when we're playing, but the best coaches of the world, we encourage ourselves to take risks. And what you're not doing is you're not encouraging yourself to take a risk at the moment. So cut yourself a bit of slack, support yourself, and then you'll find that it will be easier to do it in a match. And if you do happen to get out, do not chastise yourself at all. Again, think about, what have I learned from that error, from that failure? What have I learned? Is it because I went too early? Is it because I didn't have a good enough base, which I'm sure you're working on within your power hitting? What is it that you learn from that can help you to influence the next time that you go to power hitting in a match context? And as Sam said, sometimes we get a feel for a bowler quite early that they're not right and we want to take them down. And we can do that at number one, or we can do that at number 9, 10 and 11. It doesn't matter, but we get a sense. Sometimes it's the match situation that tells us that we have to go to power hitting. That can happen at number 1, 2 or 3, or also that can happen at 6, 7 and even lower. So prepare yourself. This is a great opportunity to learn how to rotate the strike even better than you have done so far, because you'll need it everywhere you go, and to learn how to back yourself, to support yourself and to encourage yourself that mistakes are going to happen as you learn this new skill. Give yourself a chance of making that, taking that risk and making that error in matches, and you will benefit long term as a result. So please keep us up to date with this. Yeah. But I'd love to hear of you getting caught on the fence at some point. That would be magnificent. But more importantly, I want to know about what you learned from that experience of getting caught on the fence and how that's going to impact upon your future performance.
Yeah, there's always something to learn, isn't there? And there is a big difference between calculated power hitting and panicking and swinging from the laces because you don't know what else to do. That's two different things. But even if you, like you said, Gerrits, even if you do panic and swing from the laces, you'll know next time that is something that doesn't work for you. So maybe try something a little bit different, or do it in a different way, or hit it into a different area, or whatever it is. It's about understanding, isn't it? Understanding your game is really what it's down to.
And then what a great opportunity he's got. He's a top order batter. There's no doubt in my mind that he's going to end up being a top order batter for most of his career. But he's now got the opportunity to learn some different skills and different concepts that he can take into that batting up the top of the order when he goes back to it. It's a wonderful opportunity, yeah. Rather seeing it as something that you've got to endure before you go back up there.
And turn that 80 not out into 140 not out, because you can cream it around in the last 10 overs.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and if you bat first, you win the game even before tees. I've always just thought, you think that was an amazing thing to do. If you're playing in a game and you've batted so well up front that it's inevitable that you're going to win. That is a lovely feeling to have when you go out into the field, and certainly your teammates will thank you for that. And as you say, you know, an 80 not out isn't often going to win that game at tee time. But 140 not out, you know, can do, can't it? Absolutely. Enjoy your sandwiches, and we'll see you at the end.
I'll have first slip, thanks very much.
Correct.
And now it's a minute on the clock, and it's Sam Lavery on the soapbox, and that means an uninterrupted chat from him. Lavers, over to you for this week's soapbox.
Well, I'm just going to talk about nets, really, and I think nets are a really interesting way of training, and at this time of year particularly, there's some really interesting things go on in nets, because for a lot of cricketers, and especially guys that we've had at school and a lot of other places around as well, where maybe they've trained from prior to Christmas and before Christmas, they don't always do a lot of net practice, but suddenly you start to get a lot more cricket going on, which is net related, where bowlers are bowling at batters and batters are no longer on a machine where they know where the ball's going, and suddenly things start to change. And I think it's amazing looking at bowlers when they get into a situation with a batter, of how suddenly their focus can shift from their own body and their own awareness of their movement to that of the batter and the competition in front of them. And I think it's quite good early on, just try and get a couple of weeks in, just of forgetting about the competition, remove the competition of the bat and the ball, and just, even though you're in this environment, try and focus on yourself, on the technical adjustments you might have made, and stick to those until you're really settled with them, and then go into your competition a little bit later.
And that is the end of the show for another week. We are just about to leave, but before we go, we are going to decide on the winner of this week's competition. If you remember, it is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com, and it goes to the best question of the week. So So in contention, of course, we have Liam's question about batting down the order when he's an opener, and George's question about closing the face of the bat. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
Well, I reckon these are the best pair of questions we've had in a few weeks. They're outstanding. And I think we've had some good conversations off of the back of it. And it's going to be tough on whoever doesn't get it. But this week, I'm going to go with Liam. It's an opportunity rather than a disappointment to go down the order. And I'm very much looking forward to how Liam can use this opportunity to create some great learning and become a better player.
Congratulations to you, Liam. And Gareth, if someone else wanted to win that prize by sending in their question and also having that question answered, how could they get in touch with us?
David, they can get in touch with us by giving us a call on 0203 239 7543 or dropping us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. You can find us on social media as well. Our Twitter is at @PitchVisionAcad and our Facebook is facebook.com/PitchVisionAcademy. You can listen to the show every week if you wish by downloading it onto your phone or your tablet or your computer. And the way you do that is just go into your favourite podcast app and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. Just tap the subscribe button to do all that magic. It'll go straight to your device. And if you want to listen to the show by streaming it online or looking at the show notes or downloading old shows, then you can do that as well by going to pitchvision.com/academy and clicking on the podcast link, and you'll find all the details, how to do all those things, including how to subscribe to the show, all in one place, and the show notes for anything that we talked about on this week. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, fellas.
Thanks, guys.